and we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm at my sister's house in Melbourne.
Spoiler alert. And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm sitting in my own home in Stavanger in Norway.
Hi, Mon. Good to see you.
And good to see you too. We are finally back in the swing of things, Di. Oh my God.
Racing is back. It feels good, doesn't it?
It feels so good. And obviously, our season kicked off with the first race in Melbourne, which, again, spoiler alert, is where you currently are. And oh my God, what a race.
What a season opener. It had everything, didn't it?
The race was edge of your seat stuff. If you thought the end of the 2024 season was crazy and had so much happening, it had nothing on the season opener of 2025. It was uncharacteristically rainy, although characteristic of Melbourne, really. And it was
carnage.
Absolute carnage.
It was nuts. For anybody not in Australia or not familiar with Melbourne, Melbourne's famous for having four seasons in one day. And I've lived in Melbourne. I come from Melbourne. I know that Melbourne can be 37 degrees 1 minute and drop 20 degrees and be 17 the next. And this happened at the Australian Grand Prix, except between Saturday and Sunday. Qualifying Saturday, it was 37 degrees in Melbourne. It's a different heat and it's stifling. Like,
it's a whole lot more humid.
It's baking hot. It was a sweat fest on Saturday, I'm not going to lie. And I just felt so sorry for all those people in the grandstands and in the full blazing sun. It was hot. And then Sunday, of course, the total washout. Races were cancelled, the support races and the lead up and
Well, Formula 3 got red flagged on the 18th lap because it was just torrential rain. Mm-hmm. And the Formula 2 race got called off altogether. So we're lucky we got a Formula 1 race at all.
Yeah, and the V8 supercars, which is another highlight of the Australian Grand Prix for people that go to the race, also didn't get started.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and the V8's a different category of motorsport, of course.
But it's fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, and the crashes are great as well, which, you know, I was kind of looking forward to watching some of that in the wet weather, but no. Didn't happen. We are quite lucky to have an F1 race at all.
And who would have thought on the season opener and Melbourne that it would be such a chaotic race? Because obviously you think of Australia, you think of sunshine, and I'm fairly certain they were saying it's never really happened in the history of, or in the more recent history of Formula One being in Melbourne. It's never been a washout like it has. It was crazy. I know the year that we were there, 2023, both of us were there. There was a bit of rain on and off, but it was nothing major.
Not like this.
No, not like this.
Even before the race gets started, on the formation lap, Isaac had just spun out and out. He was out before he even debuted.
Yeah, it was awful watching that. And if you have watched the race, if you've been all over social media, you would have seen that the cameras followed him all the way back to hospitality, and the poor kid had his head down, hands on his face, helmet still on. He was obviously crying. He was distraught.
Exactly.
It was just awful.
And he's racing with V-Carb Racing Bulls, right, who are known, part of the Red Bull family, take no prisoners. They're a brutal team. If you don't perform, you're out. So he's already got pressure on his shoulders as a rookie debuting, and his last race in F2 at the end of the season ended in tragedy, right? And disaster, didn't even get off the line when he was fighting for the title. Isaac Hadjar was rightly distraught, walking back into hospitality. Like you said, his head was down, helmet on, clearly crying. And then who swoops in?
Anthony Hamilton, the dad that everyone needs.
Lewis Hamilton's dad came in comforting him like a father would to a son. Such
it was
a true display of compassion and sportsmanship. Well, yeah. I saw that and my heart just melted. Well played, Anthony Hamilton. As far as we know, no relationship with Isaac Hadjar. They're in different teams, but he was just being a good guy, right?
Yeah. I did see a video of Anthony and he was saying, you know, I just felt for him and he knows what it's like and he knows the pressure and he thought he just knew that he had to go and say something. And I think it says so much about the Hamiltons. Hamilton is actually one of Isaac Hadjar's heroes. So to have Anthony come up and give him a hug, it was just absolutely beautiful. And I did see also so many people were commenting on it and they were like, Jos Verstappen would never.
Fair point. Fair point.
Jos Verstappen would never do something like that. Everyone's heard the stories about what he was like to Verstappen when Verstappen wasn't doing well.
Leaving his son at the petrol station because he didn't perform. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, no, that was just so lovely to see Anthony Hamilton being so kind. I did see that video with him as well, him saying that as a father, he knew the sacrifices his family would have had to make for him to even be there in the first place and to have it end.
Before it even started.
Exactly. And it's hard to even judge, you know, put that against his racing ability. You just can't. The conditions were just awful. It was so wet, so rainy, and his first time at a Formula One race and he, you know, first race in that car.
Yeah, to point back to what we were saying in the last episode where we were predicting, you actually predicted that Hadjar would lose his seat this season. But if we look at his entire week up until he crashed out, obviously, on the formation lap, I was actually doing so well.
There's promise there. There's a little promise there, but we need to see a lot more of Isaac, I think, before we can make any judgments.
Yes. Yeah. It was just, very unfortunate circumstances on that first lap. I mean, he wasn't the only one to crash out early, though. I mean, we had Isaac in the wall on the formation lap and lights out and away we go. First lap, poor Jack Doohan was in the wall.
I know. Our Aussie boy, and then moments later, Sainz was in the walk.
On the safety car.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt really sorry for Doohan as well because Doohan had so much pressure coming onto him or on his shoulders coming into this race. And again, if we look at the qualifications and everything, he was actually doing really well as well. He was on a belter of a lap before it was Hamilton that spun around and ruined his lap. So he was out in Q3.
We've got to talk about Kimi Antonelli overtaking Hülkenberg. I thought that was a power move on Antonelli's part. That was super impressive from that 18-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yes, talking about crashes, Alonso's
into the wall. That was the fourth retirement. Fourth retirement. He was on the wall and then it was just before there was supposed to be a big cell of rain coming through again. There was a whole lot of talk on the team radios about what to do with their strategy because it looked like there was going to be rain, but they didn't know when it was going to arrive. They didn't know if it was going to arrive. So there was, a whole lot of talk about strategy and whether or not to put on the inters.
Yeah, I think they knew there was rain coming, but they weren't sure whether they could stay on the slicks or whether they would have to pit and change to the inters. So I think that was the point of conjecture. And, the ones that took the risk, risked it, didn't they, and lost out.
Yeah, Norris was overly cautious because on the radio when they were talking about it, he was like, well, we should go to inters then, shouldn't we? I mean, I think he's probably got PTSD from Sochi when he almost won the race but stayed out on slicks and just completely lost it.
And because Sainz was already out, and he was on the pit wall for Williams, he advised them on bringing in Alex Albon to change to inters. And that's what gave Alex Albon an absolutely incredible result for Williams.
He equaled his entire points count from last year in one race.
Oh, that's a good fact.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Kick Sauber also in one race. They exceeded their entire tally for points from last year. So, it was a crazy race because, as we're saying, in lap 45, the rains came in, which people who decide to stay out on slicks, they suffered. So Verstappen was one of them. Norris came in and put on inters. So did Albon. Both McLarens came in, actually, and we saw some really interesting things. Unfortunately, even though the McLarens both ended up with inters on, they both went off the track one after the other in a very same spot. And home hero Piastri couldn't save it. He just put a bit too much on the gas coming out and spun off into the grass and was beached on the grass. But he tried and tried and tried, and he saved it. There was no safety car. He reversed it back out. He came out ahead of Ollie Bearman.
He did. You know, it was a remarkable recovery, but it just put him at the back of the pack, didn't it? And he did well to finish the race eventually in ninth.
Ninth. Yeah, so he came back for points, because by the time we finished, we had another two people go off track. So we had six DNFs. Lawson came off and Bortoletto came off as well. So we only had 14 people finish the race. And so for Piastri to come from 13th to 9th, he did really, really well. But the other big winners of the race, Antonelli.
Right.
He finished 4th. He qualified in 16th. He came up through the entire pack to finish in 4th.
Kimi Antonelli, what a little superstar. And yeah, obviously he's in a good car. How many rookies finished?
I think there was only out two. Of six. Bearman.
Yeah, Ollie Bearman, Plum last, and then Antonelli, yeah, in the Mercedes in 4th.
All props to Bearman, because he crashed twice before the race. So he crashed in practice 1 and practice 3. So for him to keep it on the road in those conditions, all props to him. Well done. So he finished Plum last, but we have Norris came in first, Verstappen second, Russell third, Antonelli in 4th. He was the highest placed rookie. Albon came in 5th, which is amazing. Williams is my good surprise for the year, and I hope I'm not prematurely calling it.
You called it. I think all the signs are there. It's looking good.
Boom, boom. All the signs are there.
6th. Stroll. Yeah. Holy moly.
Yeah, I know. And Hülkenberg, 7th in a Kicksauber.
In the Kicksauber tractor. Amazing.
Yeah. And then we went to Leclerc, Piastri, Hamilton, Gasly, Tsunoda, Ocon and Bearman. And our DNFs were in order: Hadjar, Doohan, Sainz, Alonso, Lawson and Bortoletto.
Cousin, not a cousin, one T, not two. I would have loved to have seen him finish his first Grand Prix, but he didn't. But what I did see at the track that broke my heart, it was seeing his name misspelled. They spelled his name like mine with two T's, not one. And Charles Leclerc's name was misspelled on a billboard as well.
And these were official.
That's right. I know how many pairs of eyes would have signed that artwork off before it went to the printers and missed by everyone. And sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. No one's perfect. You know, we all make mistakes, but getting a driver's name wrong, oh, that hurts.
Yeah, pretty bad.
Pretty bad. The other thing we've got to talk about is Ferrari. And the team radios. Hamilton is just not gelling with his race engineer, is he? And in fact, Charles Leclerc said the same thing as Hamilton in the middle of the race. Leave me to it. Stop giving me all this information. Leave me to it, please. They're using every ounce of concentration, keeping their car on the road and not sending it into a wall in those conditions. And the Ferrari race engineers really need a lesson from Mercedes or Red Bull or McLaren, really, don't they?
It must be really hard, though, when you've got a 7-time world champion coming into your team, trying to adjust and work out how you need to work with him, because he's been doing this for so long and he's been so successful in another team, and he's got his own way of working. He knows how to do it. So it must be hard from both sides, right? Because Ferrari are having to learn how he best wants to be dealt with, and then he needs to learn how and what Ferrari need to tell him and how they tell him that. And I mean, all props to him, though. He was very polite, although quite terse when he was responding to them, and was very, what did he say? He was like, yes, thank you, please leave me to it, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you, I know.
Hamilton asked, like, there was three different occasions I heard him say, leave me to it, please. He's been firm but polite, leave him alone. But even Charles Leclerc, he's been with the team for 4 or 5 years now, and he said the same thing to his race engineer. Oh, we've got to just say that the radio message of the race, is there a leakage? There seems to be a leakage.
I'm sitting in water. What is it?
Exactly, Charles Leclerc. I'm sitting in a puddle of water, and it's like, oh, it must be the water. What did Charles say? We'll add that to the words of wisdom.
Bloody brilliant.
It was a hell of a race.
And in case people haven't been able to tell by the way we've been talking, Di was actually at the race.
Oh, my God. After praying to the Formula One gods, the racing gods, the event gods, the Melbourne gods, everybody, promising my firstborn if I were to have a firstborn, I actually got tickets. I've got to give Belle Jackson a massive shout out. She's a fellow travel writer, award-winning travel writer, and she has a podcast as well with Kirsty Bedford, who was on our International Women's Day podcast. So together they have a travel podcast called The World Awaits. And Belle sent me a text on Friday morning saying, do you happen to be in Melbourne? I've just been invited tomorrow. I'm looking for a plus one. Of course, I said yes. And then as it turned out, the PR, who's Talia from GTI Tourism, big shout out to her as well. I called her to say thank you very much for the tickets because they'd come through and said, did you have media tickets for today, which was Friday practice day? And she said, actually, yes. So we went on Friday and Saturday. It was really good fun. And as soon as I walked into the Red Bull Energy Station, which is located at the end of the pit lane, we had a view down the pit lane on the same side as the pit, and it was kind of just diagonally opposite the start-finish line. We had a big screen opposite us. It was a two-level structure. I can't tell you. I honestly can't tell you how good it was. It was just Hollywood. I don't know how I'm ever going to go to a race and not be in the Red Bull Energy Station or the Paddock Club or something equally as epic, because it really was the most wonderful experience. I've got to give a big shout out to Vegas. So Vegas were the ones that invited Belle Jackson, who then invited me to the Red Bull Energy Station at the Melbourne Grand Prix. A massive, massive thank you to the Vegas Convention and Visitor Authority. They're a major sponsor and I'm just eternally grateful. Thank you so much. You answered my prayers. Now, being Red Bull, it was a mix of people inside there, from people who paid for their own tickets. So if you'd paid to go on the Saturday, it would have cost $3,850
wow.
per person.
For one day.
Yeah.
Holy yeah. hell.
There was like a real mix of people. Yes. People who buy tickets themselves, people who get invited, your media, your influencer types, models, celebs, and then companies who host people.
Can we also mention you ran into Crofty, who is literally the opening of our podcast, Lights Out and Away We Go. You ran into him.
I saw him. We were taking a moment on Saturday, quali day. It was so hot. So we'd left hospitality after free practice three and walked around just to have a look at the activations and see what was happening on the ground. We both wanted a glass of the Daniel Ricciardo Rosé, Enchanté Rosé.
Yeah.
So they had a rosé station. They were also doing removable tattoos. They had four different tattoos that you could get.
Did you get a tramp stamp diet?
No, I didn't. There was a big line and it was really hot and we didn't want to stand in the sun. After that, we went back into the hospitality area and they had a little garden out the front, if you like, with umbrellas, and we were just sitting in the shade. So we're just taking a quiet moment and Crofty walks past and I leapt off my stool and ran over and I was like, Crofty, Crofty. And he stopped and I said, I've got to tell you, I named our podcast after you. It's called And Away We Go F1 Podcast. And do you know what he said to me? He looks at me and he deadpan and he says, that's $20,000 you owe me. That's my line. And I went, and he goes, no, just joking. I'm really flattered. Thanks very much. And I just thought,
oh my God.
He did give me a little mild heart attack, I've got to say. Anyway, I asked him if he'd get a photo with me and he did a little video.
Bless. Oh, I love it.
And McDoan.
Did you?
McDoan.
Oh, I saw you had McDoan. Yeah. Oh my God. That's so cool.
Meanwhile, Belle Jackson was like, she's off again. So I'd just leap off my stool and run over to the fence where people were walking past. And then I have to go back there and explain to her, oh, sorry, that was so-and-so. Or that's, you know.
Yeah. Having been there with Belle, who didn't really know too much about Formula One to begin with, what were her opinions?
She thought it was fantastic. She was like,
yeah, fabulous.
You can't go into the Red Bull Energy Station hospitality suite to a place like that and think anything but. They just do it so well. Well, they had artists in there creating things. They had break dancing kind of dance-offs between professional dancers. They had a F1 simulator, a Red Bull flight simulator. There was Yeah, just lots.
So if you're not actually into the race itself, there's plenty to keep you occupied.
Oh, yeah, the networking's off the charts. And then the people watching. So you've got fans there as well who are dressed head to toe in Red Bull or head to toe in V-Carb Racing Bulls merch, and sponsors that are in there as well. And then you've got people wearing high heels to a track, which I always find hilarious. I'm like, do you not know how much walking there is? Unless you're a driver and get dropped off at the driver's entrance.
Remember that time that I had to buy an emergency pair of sneakers in Qatar because I wasn't wearing heels. I was wearing very comfortable, they weren't Birkenstocks, but they a similar style of sandal. But the amount of walking that you have to do when you go to a Grand Prix, blisters, sore feet, yeah, very big misstep wearing heels.
Belle said that her watch had said that she'd done 7,000 steps just to get in the morning before we'd done anything else. Anyway, lots of walking no matter where you are.
What was the situation like getting to the track? Because I feel like Melbourne is one of the places where they actually have really good access to the track.
There's 10 gates around the circuit. So there's trams, there's trains, there's massive buses. Taxi ranks, buses, and then you got your rideshare. Look, I was quite fortunate that both days I got dropped off at the track. Then on Saturday, leaving the track, I'm not going to lie, it was really hectic. We didn't stay till the very end of all the on-track activity. We left during the V8s, but by the time we chit-chatted to people as we were on our way out, it just took ages to get out of the circuit, ages to get on a tram, and it would have taken me...
And then they rammed.
Yeah, it took me about an hour and a half for a trip that would probably normally be maybe 45 minutes. So it was just slow and a lot.
It's a lot. I remember when we went in 2023, we were staying a fair bit north of the city, and with our tickets, we were able to get onto the tram for free into the city. And then you walked from there, there's a tram station across from one of the big train stations, and they literally have set up a big snaking line to get everyone onto this tram. And it looks really scary because it is just so long, and it goes around the block, it goes everywhere, but it moved really fast. I think we're only in the line for about half an hour, something like that. And then it takes you straight to, it stops at a couple of the gates, and then you get off and you walk in. And it was actually really easy on the way in. The way out is a whole other story. And I remember you discussing in one of our previous podcasts about literally getting on the back of someone's motorbike because you couldn't get home. And like Espen and I, we were running around trying to find scooters and different bus options, and it was just not happening because it was a nightmare trying to get on the tram at the end.
I think timing is a good thing. You know, if we didn't have places to go, we could have stayed and enjoyed. The concerts were great. They had Tones and I, they had The Living End. I had lots of concerts on at the track, which I didn't get to enjoy, but lots for fans to do, so they didn't all have to leave at the same time.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, on race day Sunday, I didn't have tickets to go, and I was okay with that. It had been two big days at the track.
Well, Espen just upgraded the Formula One TV, so when we could see that some of the drivers were getting close and there was going to be a bit of a battle, we'd put on their onboard cameras on the side as well, so we could see that happening, because obviously sometimes you miss those things because they're too busy focusing on a different battle. That was really cool. There are benefits to watching it on telly.
God, I wish we had F1 TV in Australia. Jeez. Staying at home meant we could do some cooking or do some food things before the race. So in great Australian style, we did a grazing board. So that was what we had at my uncle's place where I was staying. But Mon, you're the one that does the cooking for race themes. What did you do for the Australian Grand Prix?
Oh, look, I think I've got to preface this for anyone that doesn't know Australian cuisine. Australian cuisine isn't really, it's not a cuisine of its own, right? We steal things from everyone else's cuisine. We're very multicultural. So it was actually really hard to try and come up with something Australian. I paid homage to the country bakery stop on a road trip.
Okay. Meat pie.
Exactly. Yes. I made a steak and mushroom pie, obviously a little bit more glamorous than your bakery stop in the country town. And then I did a caramel slice only because I thought Espen, my partner, would prefer the caramel slice over the vanilla slice. So that was my little homage to the Australian bakery. And I used a recipe by Nagi from Recipe Teen Eats for both of them.
Oh,
so
yes.
In Nagi, we trust. Yep. And it turned out really, really nice. And I didn't get any photos because trying to find puff pastry here, I went to so many
Why
stores.
Why is that difficult?
And I have no idea.
I would have thought that puff pastry would be commonplace.
I know. I thought it was a very commonplace ingredient, but apparently it's not. All I could find were some like really small strips. So it ended up not looking very nice, but it tasted a treat. I made meat pies and caramel slice.
And at the MCG, having a meat pie at the MCG is an iconic Australian experience.
With the squeezy tomato sauce. So you went to the footy, which is a very, very Australian, very Melbourne thing. If people
iconic.
Don't know, the league, it was the Victorian Football League. So it's home of the football. So if you're ever going to be in Melbourne for the race, if there's a football game on, do yourself a favour and go watch the football.
The MCG is the spiritual home of AFL football. It is one of the world's greatest football grounds, and that's no exaggeration. One of the biggest as well at capacity.
Yeah.
It's 100,000 people. There was 80,000 people on Friday night when I went, and the atmosphere is like, it's electric.
And they've got is it the MCG that they've got a football museum?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. You can do tours of the MCG as well.
If you're not sure about what football is, maybe do the museum, but there's heaps of great things to do when you're in Melbourne for the race. The National Gallery of Victoria is probably one of Australia's greatest galleries. Oh my gosh, every time I go there, I could spend days there. It's fantastic. Being from Melbourne, what's your favourite part of Melbourne? Where would you recommend people go?
Well, look, there's a few different parts of Melbourne. I love St Kilda. Because St Kilda is by the beach. St Kilda Beach is really famous. Luna Park is in St Kilda. The main strip of, there's two kind of main strips of St Kilda. You've got Fitzroy Street and Acland, and they are just full of restaurants and bars and cafes and quirky shops. And I really like St Kilda. I lived in St Kilda for a while as well, so I really like it there.
Yeah.
The city, it's pedestrianised in a couple of the streets in the city, and the shopping, and again, the quirky stores for F1 fans. There's a few merchandise shops where they sell last season's merch and older merch a little bit cheaper than what you'll find at the track.
I guess one of the things that people need to see in the city as well, Melbourne's known for being full of colourful alleyways or graffitied alleyways, and is it Hosier Lane that's a legal spot for street art? So every couple of weeks, months, there's just different artworks up there. So that's a really well-known laneway. Melbourne, of all the Australian cities, I think I always liken Melbourne to somewhere like Berlin. It's quite underground. It's quite grungy and edgy, whereas Sydney is a whole lot more cosmopolitan. It's about the harbour. It's about the water.
Yeah, Sydney. To me, Sydney's shiny and bright. Sydney's shiny and bright.
Yeah.
Melbourne's European and a bit more dark and moody. Melbourne's got the coffee culture. They're very, very proud of their coffee culture and food culture, and they will put up a fight against anybody else from around Australia that says that their coffee culture or coffee scene or food scene is better than Melbourne's. Yeah, the Melburnians are staunchly proud of that. But you're right. The laneways are where you'll find a lot of gems in the city in Melbourne, you know, Flinders Lane as well, lots of great restaurants along there. So the city, St Kilda, Chapel Street around South Yarra. Also, that's where Daniel Ricciardo's pop-up store for Enchanté was. I didn't get there, but that was on Chapel Street. Carlton, of course, Little Italy, which is, which we've talked about in a previous episode, known for all its Italian restaurants and bars, and lots of Italians like to go out there. You'll see lots of Italian cars around there, especially around Grand Prix week.
Lots of Ferrari merch.
And then outside of Melbourne, I really like the Mornington Peninsula down that way. Some beautiful wineries. They've got some hot springs down there, nice beaches, calm bays.
Yeah, that's not something that people often think about when they think of Melbourne. They don't think of it as a beach destination because typically beach destinations would be Queensland or New South Wales, Western Australia for sure. but there are some beautiful beaches when you get out of Melbourne. People think of it as a city food and beverage destination, which it is.
Which, you know, and shopping. Moving into news, Mon.
Not much. Piastri did go into the Melbourne Grand Prix having just signed a multi-year extension with McLaren. And I can't remember what you said, that it was rumoured that the contract was worth.
Rumoured to be valued at $40 million a year.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Formula One, you start talking money and it just makes everyone else's life that pale in comparison. It's crazy. Crazy.
Second bit of news, we did have confirmation that Kik Sauber has confirmed Jonathan Wheatley as their team principal, and he'll take over on April the 1st. So I think it was last year it was announced that there would be a new team principal in 2025, but they didn't really say when it was going to happen. April seems like a really weird time for the new team principal to start, but hey, you know, Kik Sauber's not really focusing on 2025. They're focusing on 2026, so maybe it doesn't really matter when he starts.
Maybe he had gardening leave, you know, from Red Bull, you know, when they can't work for someone else.
That could be
the reason why most senior team personnel have gardening leave in their contracts, which Angela, Lewis Hamilton's physio, blonde Angela, who has been by Lewis's side the whole time besides the past 2 years, is because she had gardening leave for 2 years to the day that she was spotted on the Ferrari track. Though that saying that Lewis had been planning this move to Ferrari for quite some time and obviously wanted his people, the best people around him, to set him up for success at a new team at Ferrari. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, interesting.
So next week we'll be back with all the news from China. And Mon, have you got a menu planned for China?
I don't yet. So if anyone has any suggestions for what I should be cooking from Shanghai, please leave us a comment anywhere. You can leave it on our podcast, on your favorite podcast app, or you can leave it on our Facebook, our Instagram, our LinkedIn, our YouTube, wherever you want to leave it. We're on all of them. You can also leave us a lovely comment on our episodes if you really like them on any of your favorite podcast listening apps, or you can email us at And away we go, f1podcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, even if you don't have suggestions for what I should cook. Just email us. Have a chat. Yeah,
love hearing from our listeners. And, you know, we do this podcast for our listeners. So thank you very much for joining us this week. Thank you, Mon. And thank you for having us in your ears. Until next week and until lights out.
It's lights out. Away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.